This is Peter Tubbs, producer for Market to Market. Stand by for our Market Analysis podcast, which is one of three podcasts generated by our program. Market Plus is what you don't see on TV and is available in podcast form and online at markettomarket.org and on our YouTube page of Market to Market. We also have the M2M podcast, which publishes on Tuesdays and is a look at the behind-the-scenes work with our stories, as well as conversations with folks involved in agriculture. Now, here's Delaney Howell.
This is the Friday, November 1st, 2019 version of the Market Analysis segment for Market to Market. Even with weather, potential sales to Asia, and a weaker dollar, the commodity markets were relatively quiet. For the week, December wheat lost 2 cents while the nearby corn contract gained 3 cents. Dry weather in Brazil and potential sales to China did little to fire up the soy complex as January closed 2 cents higher. December meal improved 60 cents per ton. December cotton dropped 67 cents per hundredweight. Over in the dairy parlor, November Class 3 milk futures increased 68 cents to a five-year high. The livestock sector finished mixed as the December cattle contract added 345. January feeders improved 440, and the December lean hog contract fell 48 cents. In the currency markets, the U.S. dollar index declined 57 ticks. December crude oil shed 47 cents per barrel. COMEX gold added 290 per ounce. And the Goldman Sachs commodity index was flat to finish at 415.30. Joining us now to offer insight on these and other trends is regular market analyst Sean Hackett. Sean, welcome back.
Hey, Delaney, how are you? Hopefully we don't spook the markets today on Halloween.
Yes,
that's
very
the best
fitting.
I got.
Okay, well, we appreciate your attempt at
sure.
a little Halloween humor. But Sean, let's talk here about the wheat markets this week. They've had a couple of exciting weeks, and now it seems that they are relatively flat. Is the December wheat contract due for some sort of retractment here?
Well, right, this time of the year, we're normally looking at Russia. What's Russia's crop look like? What's the exports look like? And what we're seeing is that in the month of October, their exports are down 14% over last year. The ending stocks in southern Russia, which is where all the exports come from, are down 20% from 2 years ago and down 13% from a year ago. So even though last year we were looking for those exports to come off, it looks like this year they are going to come off. And with an improving ruble, it looks like the U.S. is going to get a lot more business. And we've seen some very good exports here the last couple of weeks. So we think the wheat market has some decent upside into the end of the year because of that.
Even if the U.S. dollar has some strength here, do you still continue to see the wheat market have some upside potential?
Right now, we see the dollar going down. It looks like it's rolling over. We've had the Fed Reserve say they're going to do QE4, lower rates. Everything says is the dollar actually looks like it could be topping out. And so, you know, we don't really see a lot of strength in the dollar into the year end. I mean, it's always possible, but we're assuming flat down dollar, and that's good for wheat exports.
What about corn exports? They have been just awful the past, I don't know, couple months, really. How does the U.S. dollar impact our corn market?
Well, it always makes us more competitive, but you have to kind of remember what the Brazilians did. They front ran a trade deal with China and the U.S. Sixfold increase in exports year over year is what they've been doing. And they kind of shoved all this corn in the market, and the market just has too much corn and it has to digest it. And so we've been feeling the impact of that. The good news is that's behind us. And as we start whittling away those inventories, the U.S. is going to start getting business, especially with a weaker dollar coming up. So we're optimistic. We've seen the worst for exports for corn, and we're going to see better times ahead.
Well, that is good news for producers sitting at home. Sean, I want to turn our attention to acreage because we've got the November WASD report coming out next week. They are going to be adjusting the corn acres in Minnesota and North Dakota and some of those areas that have been really affected by weather. What do you see that doing for the WASD report then? And what do you see that doing for impacts into the market next week?
It all depends on what the expectations are already built in. I mean, remember, we're already 40 or 45 cents off the lows. So a lot of expectation is built in. I mean, for sure, we've always felt that harvested acres would be coming down anyway. So, you know, we think they're going to come down, but probably the market has dialed in lower acres in this report. We don't think there's going to be a surprise there, especially with corn near resistance at 390, 395. So,
if we can break through that resistance level, Sean, what's your next target?
Well, I mean, the next target is 415, 420, and that's really the longer-term barrier that we briefly got over in June when we had the weather scare, and it came right back below it. So that would really be the longer-term resistance if we can break through this midterm resistance at 395.
Sean, I want to turn our attention here to both corn and soybeans because we've got a good question come in to us on Facebook, I believe, from Shane in Bloomfield, Nebraska. He said the market seems to be suppressing this problem of snow and harvest delays on top of the planting delays that we had. Should producers be selling cash grain now to take advantage of strong basis and then re-own the grain on March contracts?
Well, whenever you have a strong basis, and we do have strong basis, we've had a strong basis for a while, you always want to reward the market that's worth rewarding. And so, you know, whether you sell cash, we'd definitely be locking in doing basis contracts. We still think there's upside to corn going into the end of the year, as we said, with better exports, lower dollar. But we don't think the basis is going to get much better. And we do think that farmers ought to be locking in that basis now. That's a really good opportunity for the long term.
For both corn and soybean locking
well,
in that basis?
Well, corn for sure. Soybeans not as much. I mean, we think the corn basis is really the one to be doing right now.
Okay. Turning our attention to more heavily on the soybean market. We see the November and January spread continuing to tighten up a little bit there. What's that indicating to you?
Well, you know, the ending stocks were supposed to be a billion. Then they went down to 600. Now we're 450, you know, a little more adjustment. We're 350, you know, and so all of a sudden you start looking at what's going on if the Chinese start buying more soybeans as part of a trade deal. And I think the market is concerned, you know, that we might be getting ourselves too tight. And, you know, we just didn't plant enough acres this year. And that's a consequence of that.
How much upside potential does that leave us then?
In the spread or in the price?
Let's say in the price.
I mean, right now that, you know, the $9.50, you know, $10 can be a really hard barrier to get over. We don't think we can get over that without something new coming out to take the market higher. We think that's going to cap any rally attempt, and it has thus far.
Is the Chinese trade deal, is that enough to move it? Is that enough of a catalyst, so to speak?
Well, as always, we need to know the details of what it says. It was supposed to be $50 billion, then it was $20 billion, then we're not sure. You know, I guess it could be if it's a surprise that they have bigger numbers in there than we think. But unfortunately, we just don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But I don't think it's going to be enough right now.
Okay. Sean, the cotton market really took it on the chin this week. I think it was, what, a 67-something cent loss this week. Was it all due to the U.S.-China trade negotiations falling apart, or is there something else impacting the cotton markets?
Well, I mean, if you remember, we rallied from 55 cents up to 65 cents, which is a big resistance level on the chart. So that was a logical place for the market to take a step back. We had some uncertainty on trade. You know, the market is just kind of, you know, looking at all the economic data and saying, you know, maybe we've done enough for now. Why don't we take some chips off the table? Farmers are harvesting, and so they have some fresh supplies they need to price. So I just think it was more of a technical factor than anything else. We're still pretty bullish this market going higher. It's an economically sensitive market. It likes to look ahead, and with the Fed doing QE4 and lowering rates, it usually means better economic activity a year from now.
Okay. A year from now is a little bit further out there, but it does give some producers a light at the end of the tunnel. But I think really the winner of this week's market has to be the dairy market, as we saw there. And just in that cover story, you know, some producers are looking for alternatives to make ends meet, but $20 milk is 5 years. That's crazy. What is going on?
That's an outstanding price. And what everything that go wrong a year ago, everything's going right today. Three things are really going on. I'll try to be very, very quick. We had very, very poor production in the U.S. It made the cheddar production go down to flat. Cheese price is based upon cheddar price and cheddar fundamentals, which is the class three price and the dry whey price. So that has caused this tightness in the cheese market for cheddar, not other cheeses, but for cheddar alone, and has been driving the market higher. Secondly, we've had weather problems in New Zealand. This is the time of the year that New Zealand is the primary exporter of milk powder and other derivatives to the Chinese and the rest of the world, and they've had very, very cold, very wet weather. Production is going to be flat for the year during their peak production instead of being up. So now there's concerns that as China binge buys into the end of the year, they're going to drive up the milk price. And lastly, we have been hearing some things that African swine fever has been causing dairymen locally in China to cull their dairy cow herds to sell into the beef market, which has been soaring, and that production could be hurt there, which may mean the Chinese are buying even larger buyers into the milk market, just as New Zealand is not going to have as much as we thought. So it's a perfect storm, and we think we can still spike trade this market even higher into the end of the year before we might kind of exhaust this market to the upside.
Well, and that was my next question, Sean. We don't get a lot of dairy folks on, so I've got to take advantage of you
sure.
Since you're here. Are we going to see some sort of hangover effect, so to speak, for the dairy market after this all plays out?
Absolutely. We see some early bearish warning signs in the month of September. U.S. production was up 1.3%. Cheddar production was up 1.2%. It's the first time we've had up up and up month for the entire year like that. So it's already telling you we're starting to get the response domestically for these high prices. It's not enough yet to make a difference, but once we get over, whatever we have to do here, there's going to be a hangover. And so, dairymen should not look a gift horse in the mouth too long because it might just go away on us.
Okay. We also had big moves this week in both live cattle and feeder cattle markets. Sean, I want to ask first about the April live cattle contract. Are we in to put in some seasonal highs here?
Seasonal highs really take place in the first quarter, so we do not think we're anywhere near a seasonal high. When we look at the cattle market, we're coming off that Tyson fire spike low and been running the market higher. As you know, we follow smart money capital flows in ag markets, and what's amazing is this entire rally up, there's been almost no smart money selling, which is very, very unusual and suggests this is not just a tradable rally, this is a higher order rally, and it has been. April has clear resistance at 130. We don't see any reason why we can't go there first before there might be some pause in the market or some retrenchment from a big move. So we still think there's more upside to be had here.
130 is your target in live cattle. What's your new target in the March feeder cattle contract?
The feeder market has a wall of resistance in that, 155, 160 area. We would just think that that's likely going to hold the market back on any kind of rally attempt. So it's not as big of a move as, let's say, the live cattle market, but we still think the market moves smartly up from here. But that would be has been a long-term target that did hold the market back last year, around that level. So,
all right, Sean, your quick thoughts here on the lean hog market. We've seen jumps in weight 3 weeks in a row. We've seen, abysmal prices again in the hog market. Where did we head from here?
Endless supply, endless demand, and there we go. We're stuck in this violent trading range based upon whatever wins out in a given week. And until we get to the first quarter when pork production domestically is going to start to come down, it's going to be very hard to sustain a rally beyond the trading range. So that's where we're at. And it's frustrating. At the same time, it's understandable. So
what is the trading range that you're watching, let's say, for the February chart in particular?
I think, our top side, you're looking at something like, 70 cents, something of that nature. We're a 10 cent range. We're looking for kind of a 10 cent back and forth range that we've been stuck in. And it's really hard for us to see us getting out of that until we get closer to the end of the year when the Chinese tend to binge buy ahead of their, holiday season. And that's when the market start to worry about these tighter supplies coming in the first quarter. But it still could be a slog for another 30 days before we get there.
Okay. Sean Hackett, thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Thanks.
That wraps up the broadcast portion of Market to Market, but we will keep this conversation going on Market Plus, where we'll answer more of your questions. You can find it on our website at markettomarket.org. We've been filling our Instagram stories feed with some of the best fall images in rural America, and we added a behind-the-scenes look at our production today. Find us at IPTV Market on Instagram. Join us again next week when we'll see how one agent spent 3 decades investigating ag-related crimes. So until then, thanks for watching. I'm Delaney Howell. Have a great week.